The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello and goodbye, I think. This is it. This is so sad. This is the end of Succession Season 2. I don't think it's goodbye for the entire Succession Sleep Money Recap podcast, but this is the end of the season. Now is when you go back and start rewatching the whole thing from the beginning of season one, I guess.
Definitely. And re-listen to the podcast, obviously, as well.
But let me introduce ourselves. I am Felix Salmon of Axios. Emily Peck is here from HuffPost.
Hello.
And because what we like to do in true Succession style is circle back and recapitulate attempts by Kendall to stab his father, we are recapitulating and circling back and bringing back the one and only Ed Lee of the New York Times.
Hello.
Who told us everything he knew on episode one.
The primer. I offered my version of a primer.
And so therefore you're just going to sit here and say, nothing more to add.
I've done my take. It's full and complete and in-depth. So much to talk about.
There will be so much to talk about because obviously, oh my God.
That ending. Have to say, I feel like I saw it coming a little bit. Feeling this week that it was going to be Logan as the blood sacrifice. Felix, he replied to my tweet speculating on this.
We're going to have to.
By saying, just no.
We're going to have to get into a semantic something about this one.
Yeah.
We
are going to get into this, but before we do, we need to get very excited about the fact that Tamara Adler is here. Tamara,
yes.
Hello.
Hello.
This is your opportunity to plug your podcast.
I have a podcast coming out really soon.
It's at the beginning of November.
November 1st.
And it's about food.
It's about food, but even better, it's about everything you think about food and the fact that it isn't true.
Okay, so let me tell you something.
What's it called? What's the title of your podcast?
It's called Food Actually.
Where will we be able to learn
and then it?
It
gets complicated because it's on Luminary.
It's on Luminary, but so many other great shows are on Luminary.
Okay.
That it is worth subscribing. And you actually don't even need to decide now, because after you listen to the first episode of Food Actually for free, you're going to be hooked.
You're going to be hooked. So the thing I believe about food, I believe two things about food. I believe, number one, that one shouldn't order a full bottle of Burgundy for breakfast. Mm. And number two, that one shouldn't eat someone else's chicken.
How about number three?
Thank you for the chicken.
That was obviously a chicken wing. Which is a weird thing.
It was. Wow, there was a bone in the middle of it.
Right.
That was a chicken wing. It was the part. So a chicken wing is broken up into two pieces. There's the drumette. And then,
this is why Tamara needs to be on Slate Money Succession.
This is brilliant.
I didn't see this coming when I thought about this conversation.
There's the drumette, which is the part that's closest to the chicken's body. And then there's the other part, which has two bones. That was obviously a drumette, which means that Logan's plate of food, which was delivered by a server with
gloves on.
What?
Gloves.
Yeah. What? Yep. There was a drumette on the side of the plate. There are a lot of ways to read that.
So tell me how to read that. Because while we're all obsessing about the, obvious, symbolism of the yacht, you are looking at the obvious symbolism of the drumette. It reminded me actually a little bit of Steve Schwartzman's crab claws. Steve Schwartzman famously would order king crab claws without the rest of the king crab, because the rest of the king crab, it gets a bit fiddly to get the meat out. So he's like, just give me the claw, because
that's what we all want anyway.
Ignore the rest of the king crab. Like, obviously, Logan just loves that one piece of the chicken, the drumette, so he can do basically exactly what Tom did. And so this is what he gets for lunch is... it looked like a Caesar salad, something like that, mm-hmm. with a little drumette on the side.
Yeah, or maybe a few drumettes. So maybe when he asks for it, he says, I'll have the thing with the chicken. And then they know to just give him the lunch, but with a kind of little pile of drumettes on the side. That's just his idiosyncratic
And maybe
order.
That's all he really eats anyway.
He might
just
eat the chicken.
It could well be like a Warren Buffett thing where, you're a billionaire, but ultimately you have relatively lowbrow mm-hmm. taste in food.
We just know that because of the pizza incident at
Correct.
The Summer Palace. We know that he has very lowbrow taste.
Right.
And he kind of uses it as a tool.
I mean, these people don't actually care about food in any real way. I don't think, as I've watched episode after episode.
I mean, Connor hyper-decants.
He hyper-decants.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not hyper-decant, right?
They drink, for sure, and they care about drinking and their Japanese whiskey, etc., but they do not care about food. They throw out shrimp and steak and order pizza, and then they hardly eat at every time, you know, they have to sit down and pummel each other.
There's a lot of theater, right?
Yeah.
And how they live as rich people.
Yes.
Right. I think that's sort of the idea that really they just want the pizza and the cocaine, and then that's it. Maybe burgundy for breakfast. But everything else, all the sort of highfalutin aspect of it is just, it's just, they're playing the part.
I have to say, I was slightly disappointed when you actually did see, you didn't see the burgundy arrive, but you did see Connor with his wine glass in front of him in that, like, you know, amazing breakfast scene. And I was mildly disappointed, but also it just reinforced everything I knew about Connor to see that the burgundy was red. I feel like if you're going to order burgundy for breakfast, the crew on the yacht should just understand that the right kind of burgundy to have for breakfast is obviously white burgundy, which in any case is a superior drink to red burgundy. But that's an entire other.
We're going deep on this.
We're going deep on the burgundy because, frankly, what else was there to talk about in this episode? Almost nothing happened.
Yeah, it's such a disappointing finale. My goodness.
So we're just going to have to talk about chicken drumsticks.
Chicken drumsticks, burgundy for breakfast, red, not white, though it should have been white. I agree with you.
If he had any taste, which he doesn't.
So this whole season has been building us to this moment of Kendall taking the power back and just knifing his father in that last scene, right? I mean, he's broken down at the beginning.
Yep.
He's a robot.
Yep.
I looked at the plans and my dad's plan was better. He was totally programmed. So we think in the season finale, he's going to be totally programmed too. Alas, no. He has that amazing but. You know, he says they wanted me to, you know, come out here and take the blame. But
and Carolina is like the look of sheer panic in her eyes. She's on the phone going, fuck.
It was a beautiful thing to behold.
And it has been suggested I would be a suitable figure to absorb the anger and concern. But the truth is that my father is a malignant presence, a bully and a liar, and he was fully personally aware of these events for many years and made efforts to hide and cover up.
If the episode had just ended with Kendall, you know, again, like, just beaten down,
being
taking the blame, it would
river.
Have defeated, the whole season would have been a bust.
Well, it sort of was the bookend, right? From the very first episode where he had that really sort of, you know, kind of meager, you know, press conference where he was pulled out of his Icelandic mud bath, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, sort of, can I, they're like, no, you can't finish. You need to go to do this now. He gets the card. He does his thing. Just very sort of kind of contrite and beaten down.
Yep.
And then here's a different Kendall, which is,
so,
we've seen him built up through the whole season, right?
Well, he
got so
really
much better this season.
I mean, there was a character arc for Kendall over the season, but in every single episode, in one way or another, he was still a broken Kendall. And, you know, that was what Naomi says to him on the yacht, right? Is that, you know, and you could see in one way or another, Logan beating him down and breaking him. Like, he wasn't broken enough at the beginning that he needed to continually be rebroken by getting dragged back into the kid's house.
He
and
sent
all the
Naomi away. Look, Logan, I was wondering, I mean, was Kendall always going to do this, or what happened on the yacht to sort of provoke him? Was it sending Naomi away? Was it, you're not a killer?
It was, you're not a killer.
Was it,
I think,
not
it's
a
you're
killer?
Not a killer.
It was,
and
you're not a killer.
The sacrifice story. I mean, that story told to you would force anybody's hand to
the no
kill
real
their dad.
When he said there's no real person involved, don't even worry about how you did the manslaughter thing.
No, when he tells,
I thought that was a
no. When he talked about the Incas and said
what else
could you love so much that you know, would cause the sun to rise in the morning,
inadvertently inspiring him.
Yeah,
which interestingly he put in the mouth of Marcia.
Well, I think I think her sort of, I bought that because I think she presents sort of this broader worldview of things, right? And so
she has a little bit of literary sophistication.
Exactly, because Logan is sort of like savages, right? She's like, well, come on, let's take a closer look at this, right? There's a bigger picture in terms of what that meant for these people. Mm-hmm.
Can I also, by the way, since we're talking about literary sophistication, I need to drop this in here. There's an Easter egg when they're sitting around in on the deck of the yacht. And Roman is sitting next to Jerry and speculating that Frank is going to be the blood sacrifice.
And Jerry's reading a book.
Ed, what book is Jerry
I don't know.
Reading?
What, someone's going to tell me which book
Polish
is
Girls.
Yeah.
The Lullaby of Polish Girls.
And who
girls?
Is the Polish girl?
Is Karolina.
There we
Real
go.
Real life Karolina, the whose name
Dagmara
is...
Dagmara Domincik.
Mm-hmm. I love that it's also the character is a press agent who's written a book, you know, in... In if we go out into the real world, right, and coming back into this fictional world, it's,
I mean,
that's
I love
not,
that.
Yeah, that's yeah. a whole thing.
Good job.
Shiv was reading Sally Rooney.
Yes, she was,
which was pretty
very
rad,
trendy, I guess.
Well, and very thematically appropriate
for who she is. As, yeah.
For who she is, for what was going on between her and Tom. Sally Rooney's, you know, stories are obviously full of drama, infidelity, you know, love, tension, and there they are in the next cove. Another cove. One more. What's his name? Julian?
Julius.
Julius.
Next cove, Julian. Julius.
I thought it was a Julian? Woman. Anyway, but like, in any case, there was a sea urchin. any cove with a sea urchin is a suboptimal, imperfect cove.
Yeah, that's clearly
so
that
you
cove.
Should probably pick the next one over that has no sea urchin.
I mean, this was a great episode for Tom Shiv. Everything.
It really was.
We have been wondering all season, like, what is happening in this marriage? Why are they doing this? And
we've
finally
been wondering that since season one.
Yeah. And finally, it sort of breaks open in the cove. And, you know, Tom really, he uses the threesome to really get into it.
Confessional.
And what does he say? I'm not going to be happier. I can't tell.
I wonder, if I would be sadder, you know, without you than
I am
with you.
You
basically,
like,
is what he said.
I think a lot of the time, if I think about it, I think a lot of the time, I'm really pretty unhappy.
What are you saying?
I don't know. I love you, I do. I just, I wonder if the sad I'd be without you would be less than the sad I get from being with you.
And I think actually pushed her to do something that was maybe not good for her, which is defend him.
So she's made
to
her
Logan.
Own sacrifice,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
you know,
she made her
sacrificed
own sacrifice.
Her own position with her dad by just saying, it can't be Tom, anyone but Tom. Not that Tom was going to be necessarily, but you could see her sort of putting herself on the line.
Well, what happened, the quote is where Logan goes up to Shiv and there's still this kind of glimmer of possibility that she could take over from him because obviously Rhea's not going to take over. And he presents her with, quote, the sort of tough choice people need to be able to make. And her reply to that is, I can't choose, Dad.
Yes.
And like at that point, she's basically saying, don't give me the job, I can't do it.
I can't make that tough call, which is sort of what this whole episode has really been about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we want to get to it now, but I think there is this issue, this argument over who the blood sacrifice really was. Because even though we see it's Logan at the end, there is this moment in the beginning where he's on the road and he's talking to a shareholder, where the shareholder's basically like, it needs to be you. And he goes, let me think about that, right? And you kind of wonder, like, it seems like it's set up to be there. He knew it was going to be him anyway.
Right, that was the foreshadowing.
I really wonder about
that. In other words, that was inevitable. So he required someone to make that call. No one was doing it. Right?
And he
until the
he set up
wasn't
Kendall
do
to do
it.
He sets up Kendall,
which is
to do
why
it.
He smiles at the end.
Yes, right.
Well, does he smile because he's proud of his son?
Yeah.
Yeah. He absolutely
because
that's,
like,
that's how I read it.
Because he was like, if I just step down, it's not nearly as effective as if Kendall knifes me.
Well, maybe it stays in the family because Kendall gets to keep control.
Kendall gets to keep control. Right. And, you know, it feels meaningful, right? Your own son doing this. And it's just, I think that's sort of, there's this kind of great Shakespearean, you know, Athenian tragedy aspect to that whole episode. I think it's no mistake that not that far from Greece.
He's basically asking his son to do it, but he can't ask,
he
him,
can't
to
ask
do
him,
it.
Him to do it.
And
yes.
He can't himself step down because he has too much of an ego. And it's clear when if you're following the story, and we all follow corporate America, that it had to be Logan. He had to be the one to step down. He ran this company. He's responsible. There's no other.
He was the Travis Kalanick figure, basically. Yeah. He was the guy who was like, who set the culture for the entire company.
Yeah.
And the fish rots from the head down. Like, it had to be
it had to
Logan.
Be him.
Is there any example in the real world of a sacrifice of a firstborn son in the business world,
in corporate America.
In corporate America.
I was actually thinking about them when it happened. I'm like, this is a departure from reality because I can't think of one. I'm sure there has been, but
I'm trying to think,
I really can't think of an example where something like that happened, where like a family-owned corporate entity and someone was first son or second son, whichever blood relative was sacrificed for, you know, your own sins, essentially, or the other way around. So I haven't, because the closest... Not the closest, but the one in recent memory was the whole Murdoch hacking scandal, mm-hmm. where right. there was testimony in front of Parliament, and you saw both Rupert and James, his son, you know, in front, and James doing his best to sort of explain his role, non-role in this hacking thing.
I got the email, I just didn't read the email.
Right, for those of us who cared about that specific moment, and there was the whole pieing incident as well, which that is a stranger truth than fiction, but that... Neither of them were sacrificed. Neither of them ultimately took the blame for it. It was Rebecca Brooks who did.
Right? Who was kind of a quasi-daughter figure.
Quasi-daughter figure who ran Murdoch's UK newspapers. She was sacrificed, but then brought back into the fold after what it was, like 2 years of...
Right.
But what about James Murdoch? Like, I feel like he emerged from that pretty...
He was the closest to getting burned, right? But it never really happened.
And now he invests in Vice.
Now he invests in Vice.
Yeah. Which we have mentioned this on the podcast before, but that his investment vehicle for investing in Vice is Looper, which is the wolf who raised Romulus and Remus. Yeah.
Right. It's too good. Amazing.
That great tweet when he invested in Vice and someone like tweeted it out saying like, I've seen their plan and my dad's plan is better.
Didn't the Valter episode also like kind of set me up to prepare like for Kendall to come in at the end and do something?
Yeah, because when Logan says you're not a killer, you flash back to episode two and you're like, well he was a killer.
Yeah, he killed.
True, but he was doing it at the behest of his dad, right? He wasn't
and
sort
even
of his
weirdly
own volition.
At the behest of
Roman, right.
Right. And Roman, like that, when he gets offered the COO job and he's like, well, am I going to have that, like, what did he call him? Pusillanimous. I can't remember. It wasn't pusillanimous. It was something like that. Frank, like, breathing down my shoulder. And Logan's like, nah, he's off to clean up cruises. So you're on your own.
So Roman in this episode, let's discuss. He seems
Roman,
to have grown
Roman
up.
He shines.
Yes.
Because this is my role. Did you guys notice what he was drinking at the breakfast table?
Oh, I missed this. You're going to
have to. No, what is this?
A green juice.
Oh!
You see?
Wow.
So he's cleaned up. He's sitting there. He's the only one drinking a green juice. It probably has like protein powder in it. Mm-hmm. You know, he is...
Bee pollen and... Yes,
bee pollen. Right,
yeah. No burgundy, no coffee.
Collecting the energy. Yeah, no burgundy.
He's None the hippie. Weird he is the hippie in this episode.
Yeah, and I bet I wouldn't be surprised if, like, at home, he actually has been drinking green juice with no one watching. Maybe Tabitha goes in the other room. I think he has green juice on a regular basis. It's part of his, like, there is somewhere in there, there's, like, a healthy...
So it's like
can we talk about the plus ones who are and who are not on the boat? Because obviously there's a whole subplot.
I do want to get back to Roman.
Naomi.
Okay.
But where's Tabitha? But where the fuck is Marcia?
She's gone. Well, she left him.
But she's very purposely not there. That's the point of that episode.
He wakes up in the bed and he looks over and it's empty and it's like.
But has she
actually literally
him?
Says
yeah,
I miss
her. Or is she just not on the boat?
No, she left him.
She's not left him.
She left him.
Left him.
Yeah.
What's
she's
also,
gone.
Yeah. She's left him.
He
and,
broke something. Remember?
Yeah.
Sure.
He says, I miss her. He actually misses
her. He says he misses her. And I mean, there was that thing where she's like, you've broken something. And there was clearly like, that was them fighting for the first time that we've really seen them fighting. But, you know, it's a big step from like, you know, you did something, you never told me about the fact that you're going to name someone as CEO to I'm going to leave you.
I mean, he was also, I think, sleeping with Rhea or trying to.
Yeah, you know, I still wonder about that. There's just the way it's, the way they put that show together in terms of that whole, is she, are they or aren't they? I think it's purposely sort of, not clear, mm-hmm. right? You're supposed to sort of as the audience, you're wonder guessing, and then I think Marcia sort of either senses it, or even if it
didn't
actually happen,
she certainly senses it. She's like, have you been?
Well, but I think her whole thing is like, I don't care whether you actually have or not. The point is, you've broken something here, right? You've sort of, it's not just Rhea. It's that you're doing all these things and not letting me in on it.
Yeah,
you're treating me like one of your kids, etc. And I think that's really, it's been building up.
from. Yeah, but I think she, I think she'll be back for season three.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise they wouldn't keep talking about her so much, right? I mean, she's been in, since she's gone, she's been a bigger presence, maybe arguably, than since she was there.
But we also, yeah, we need her. I mean, she always plays this really unique, she kind of is like totemic for like wisdom or like other, you know, that she has these like very strong and weird.
Or just being like old world and the sort of, yeah.
Like she symbolizes Burgundian.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
But to go back to Roman a little, it really does seem like he's come back with some kind of wisdom. And then he's sitting on the yacht deck with his siblings and he says, after this is over, can we just like talk like real, real humans? And they're like, can we talk? What is he saying? We talk like real humans?
Like, you know, like regular people, like normal, like
yeah,
normal.
Like normal.
Like normal. Like, normal. Like, right. That normal, was the operative
like,
word.
No, normal.
Right.
And it was like, oh, no, you can't.
I did think, and I thought, you know, they were going to vacuum out my innards and fill me with concrete or something. But if we come through this, is there a thing where we like talk to each other about stuff normally?
You want to talk to each other normally?
Okay.
You mean
talk about the big shit?
Yeah, we could talk about the big shit.
We could talk about our feelings.
How am I the mature one here?
We don't have any feelings. What are you talking about? Who is this helping?
You know, he had this near-death experience, right? So he finally had this moment of like, oh, crap. It's like, this is real and this is dangerous. And like, what's my life about?
It's like
and
his gravitas
his
moment.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. He's, you know, and he shines in this episode where he's just like, you know what, Dad? This is not, I don't think this is real.
He's like, I'm a bullshitter.
Yeah,
and
I know.
I know from bullshit.
Exactly. So that was the smart business call, right? And you're not going to hang it on this thing.
And meanwhile,
you went after
Jamie is like the, and he just like, he's like, yeah, I know what's happening internally in your bank.
Yes.
You need to get this deal. You're desperate for the deal. Jamie just becomes crushed. He gets excommunicated from the island on the first boat out. Yeah.
It was such good night, sweet ladies or something. Yeah. Like, what was that? He was just so crushed by Roman. It was it was a beautiful thing to behold when he said, what, you're going to make like $100 million on this?
He's like, I don't know what to say about, I don't know what to say to that. And Roman just, so don't say anything.
It was like this searing indictment of basically investment bankers too, right?
Because yeah,
that
I loved
was that
it
whole,
so
his
much.
Whole role that
because
he
has,
into.
Because he, if he, pushes this deal, like the idea is, just to be clear about this, that the Azerbaijani state something will put up $10 billion and then Jamie will raise another what, like $30 billion
has
in
to
debt
be, at
something
least,
like
yeah,
that
mm-hmm. some insane amount,
because he is like this like Jimmy Lee figure who can just like make a couple phone calls and raise billions and billions of dollars in debt finance.
I think Jimmy Lee is probably the accurate. Yeah, I was racking my brain for who is the closest sort of big figure investment banker type that sort of, I think it's Jimmy Lee.
Where's Jimmy Lee from?
Well, he's, where's he now?
He was at JP Morgan.
JP Morgan, yeah.
But didn't he die?
Oh, God.
You I think what? He died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, he was this legendary like JP Morgan investment banker who, or financier, I guess you would call
connected
it.
Connected to everyone.
Knew everyone. And like, you could just phone him up and say, Jimmy, I need to borrow $25 billion. Can you put this together for me? And he'd put together like an AB loan, put together a syndicate of banks, and boom, now it's your $25 billion. And you might have to pay up for it, but you would have your $25 billion. And Jamie Laird is clearly, which, who, by the way, he's the only person who people, it's so confusing. Half the time they call him Led and half the time they call him Jamie. And I'm like, why? Like, what?
I was so
just
confused.
Just pick one name and stick with it.
On
Jesus
a different
Christ.
Podcast, I was like, is he Laird? And everyone was like, he's Jamie. And I was like, who is he? But now he's gone. And he said, someone's getting tossed out of the balloon. Someone is likely going to jail. Good night. Good night, sweet ladies. And good luck.
Was that a reference to anything?
I don't know.
It sounded like it. Good night, sweet ladies. Sounded like...
I mean, it sounds like the end of Hamlet, right? Like, good night, sweet prince, but...
Yeah.
I think that's the reference. I think that's the reference they're going for, yeah.
And then the someone's getting tossed out of the balloon. If you watch the after the episode kind of thing, Jesse Armstrong was saying that putting them all on the yacht together was a version of the balloon argument when you're all in the hot air balloon and it's losing
air. Who gets
air,
tossed off?
And you have to argue over who gets tossed off the balloon. So that's what the
well, there's that great scene where they're all around the table, like pointing fingers at each other, who it should be.
That wonderful
and
little
it goes
coming
all
and
way
it's,
around.
It's all of like the non-family members like pointing at each other because right. The one rule is that if you're not a family member, you can never point at a family member.
Right.
And it's so weak. Like in reality, just leave this company. Why do they want to stay at Waystar Royco at this point? It's a sinking. It is a sinking ship. It is a deflating balloon.
I think it is exactly the right
question.
Why
does Jerry want to stay?
But I think the Frank character, I think, really sort of encapsulates it, which is he comes back basically on his knees. It's because they can't not. It's just that lifestyle and sort of that proximity to power and having some ancillary power of your own. It's like it's really hard to walk away from. And yes, you could. I'm sure he's already rich on his own. But like, they don't do it for that. They do it for the power.
And self-definition. I mean, they're in a deeply abusive relationship. They're all in an abusive relationship. So they're codependent with this maniac. And they've been defined by it. They've been defined by these relationships to Logan for so long that I can't even imagine what they would like. They probably don't know who they are.
And that's what Shiv is doing to Tom. She is like recreating. She is her father in the relationship, and she's making.
She's abusing him.
She's abusing Tom. She's like makes him have an open marriage that he obviously doesn't want. Tries to force him into a three-way. Humiliates him in front of the family. Offers him up to be the blood sacrifice at that breakfast, and then like finally pushes him to the limit where he has to kind of like fight back a little bit. But it's clearly some kind of recreation, and she needs to be like the powerful one in their relationship.
You mean when you're hanging out with your husband, you don't call him a meat puppet?
My meat puppet isn't working.
No. But then she has this moment of, you know, being human, where she goes to her dad and says, it can't be Tom. And I can't do this.
But only after Tom has his moment of being human. And this is
threatening the
relationship.
This
right.
is the weird thing. Like Tom's reaction to being shat upon by Shiv and by everyone, really, is to just shit on everyone below him, to, you know, use human beings as footstools and stuff, which is not his natural inclination. It's just what he feels he needs to do in this kind of incredibly fucked up world.
Yeah, he's been destroyed by the world just like all of them. Just like Shiv has. Her arc this season has been really interesting because it was like she was on top of it all at the beginning, gets sucked into the world, and now by this finale is just destroyed. She lost her shot. She comes off looking weak. She used to be like the smart one. Right. Remember?
But she's the one who winds up like sitting next to Logan at the end, not being across the cruise scandal.
This moment of like, what are you doing? And you can see it in Logan's face, like, oh, he's doing the thing. I think there's like, I made this comment earlier about there's play acting, right? I think this family and pretty much most of the characters have been play acting, like the role that they think they're supposed to play without really realizing it. Logan is the only one who is ruthless enough to know, like, here's what you really need to be and what you need to do. Kendall finally captures that at the end. I think that is the point of, in a lot of ways, a series, is that are you just sort of fitting out this role of the, you know, the princeling, and this is what you're supposed to be doing? And Roman, sort of, he's the court jester, but he, like, understands it's mostly bullshit, so he sort of kind of finds his way. He has a moment of reality where he's like, oh, this is a real thing, and this is not a good deal, and Dad, don't take it. And Shiv recognizes that she's not this person either. And then Kendall finally says, you know, I am this person. Kendall has done this...
three times now, right? Mm-hmm. He tried the boardroom coup which was him like really seizing the day, and that fails. He then joins
Stewie, you know,
Stewie and Sandy, and that's him seizing the day and making the bold move, and that fails. Now he's doing it a third time.
But I feel like this time is different because I feel like, you know, I think he presents, I mean, the closest in a lot of ways for me as a reporter in terms of looking at this world was James Murdoch, in that he was very much like this technocrat, right? Very smart about the business, understands balance sheets and finances and how you operate something. And it's more or less what Logan is telling him. Like, oh, you're smart, you know what to do, but you don't have that killer thing. And I think those earlier attempts to take over were like these sort of technocratic moves. They were sort of like these, yes, well, if you do A, B, and
Stewie
C...
Stewie is a technocrat, right?
Stewie is a technocrat, right? And so I think...
It's just like, this is all about just persuading a majority of shareholders that they can get a little bit more money.
Right, it's like counting the votes, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Sandy, which we haven't seen, you know, unfortunately, but like he is that power behind the behind that throne, which is, it's really, he's the Rupert, not the Rupert Murdoch, but the, who do we call him before?
Who,
John Malone. He's the John Malone.
John
he's
Malone,
the Darth
yeah.
John Malone, by the way, who Al Gore once referred to as the Darth Vader of cable. Right? So anyway, my point being is that like he and Stewie teaming up are like college buddies pulling a prank almost, right? It sort of didn't feel that real.
Mm-hmm.
This felt real. This felt like, you know what? This is the only way to seize power is to take it.
But also that kind of the whole sort of like quasi-syphilitic aspect of Sandy, like, reminds me a little bit of Sumner.
Right,
reminds me a little bit of like Robert Maxwell.
I think there's a bit of Robert Maxwell. I think also, I think Logan is an interesting character in the sense that I always see him as sort of this perfect hybrid of Sumner and Rupert. Sumner was a yeller, or is a yeller still technically, right? Rupert is not. He's not a yeller, but he's super, he can be super difficult in the way that Logan is difficult. But you sort of take that combination of sort of shrewd and cold, but also a yeller. And then you've got like this crazy, crazy mega media mogul that neither one reality of either Rupert Murdoch or...
And that Kendall goes like so on the record, nothing has ever been more on the record in the history of on the record. And he says, the truth is my father is a malignant presence, a bully and a liar.
It is the truth.
Which, if he'd
show
said
me the
that,
lie.
If he'd said that off the record to the biographer, like that would have been the end of it. But, like, since he says it on the record to a whole press conference,
and he like does it like it's like he could lose the whole thing. Like it's a very, he does, it's very risky what he does. It's not like, well, like what you were saying, Ed. It's not a technocratic move. It's a really a risky
it's
play because
a ballsy move, right?
He was part of the whole thing too, and I think he even alludes to that at one point.
Yeah,
in
he's
his
like,
speech.
You know what? This might have been my fault too.
This might have been me too. Like, who knows what's going to happen? But I'm coming out with the truth, and that's pretty. I mean, it's pretty bold and risky.
Does
he has nothing to lose anymore?
Does
the whole
Kendall?
Season.
Do Kendall and Greg sort this out?
Yeah, is
on the
this
plane
is
ride?
This is the question.
Oh, that was
yeah.
a great
yeah.
moment,
the
right? Where
ride.
he's got the papers in the manila envelope,
yeah.
and you're like, what is this? Where
so
is
does this happen? Let's go back. Can we go back
yeah.
to the plane ride?
Is Greg a fucking
we're
killer?
Is
Greg a killer?
Because we're on the plane. Are you okay, man? This is Greg to Kendall. Are
yeah.
you okay, man? Ken's like, you can go to the bathroom.
I'm not gonna
jump out of the plane.
Okay, but like, to be clear, is that? Because, like, Greg was on Kendall sitting duties earlier in the season,
yes.
right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so...
And getting him drugs.
And is
Park
that,
Coke. Park Coke is
Park
what
Coke.
He was getting him.
He got him
I'm
Park
doing
Coke.
Park Coke? Okay.
And then Kendall gave Greg the apartment.
But just to be clear, when Kendall gets sent off to do his seppuku thing in front of the world's press... And he takes Greg with him. Like, that was, I'm looking
so
at
when
that
they
and I'm
step
seeing,
off.
I'm seeing Greg get onto the helicopter. I'm like,
why?
Did Kendall take Greg with him? Did Logan ask Greg to go with him? Like, how is Greg on that helicopter?
It's Greg yeah. Sprinkles, man.
It's Greg Sprinkles. But I think,
right.
I think you're right, Mar. I think it's Kendall taking him with him because they get off the plane. You see, they're both all, they're dressed up. They're yep. in their suits. They've got mission and Greg has got.
Greg has his briefcase.
He's got his briefcase.
And it's right. very note. It must
secret
be,
files.
It must be
yes.
something about the camera work because I totally noticed that exact thing. It must be how it was framed because Kendall walks ahead of him, nothing
right.
in his hands. And then Greg's behind him and you notice.
And you yes. notice the briefcase, but also you notice because, you know, they care about the small things on this show. That Kendall walks off the plane wearing a fucking perfect suit.
Yes.
And then Greg walks off the plane like a few seconds later wearing a not perfect suit.
At least he's a little bit more cleaned up than he had been before.
Yeah, hopefully the fungus is gone.
Yeah. Well, having them out like that is good for fungus, I think. You know, it sails out. But
I love that great line where like Kendall shouts over to him, "Are you ready to step up, Greg?" And Ken's like, "Well, I think the fungus is going."
But if you remember at the end of season one, Greg approached Kendall and tried to use what he knew. Remember that? He approached Kendall and Kendall was like, "I see you, Greg."
Yeah.
So I feel like the seeds of this were actually planted then, or you could read it that way. That, you know, Greg was trying to give him that information way back then to get on his good side in case he ran the company. And then maybe Kendall remembered and thus a partnership.
And they've had this more of a interconnection through the season between Kendall and Greg. And we tend to think of Greg as sort of with Tom mostly, which he is. But really, it's like I think he developed that thing with Kendall through the season that paid off.
And I think Greg and Tom had their breakup in the DC episode.
That's right. They had their breakup.
Yelling at him, saying like, "Did you?" I don't remember what he said.
Throwing water bottles at him.
Well, there was that. And then, you know, he felt like Wamsgans like sold him out in DC. So I feel like that kind of ended their relationship, especially after Tom's performance in front of the hearing, which was.
Which, by the way, can we just mention? Can we just talk about that
dead
great?
Catting.
The pre-credit sequence where Greg is like, "Yes, if it is to be said."
Oh my God. You can just speak English.
I shall.
Gregory Hirsch, executive assistant to Tom Wamsgans, correct?
Yes. Yes, if it is to be said.
I'm sorry.
If it is to be said, so it is.
Are you all right?
Yes. I'm merely wish to answer in the affirmative fashion.
You can speak to us normally.
Okay. No, thank you, sir. So I shall.
And then he's talking about like things he could have said.
Yeah, which was so relatable. Who among us hasn't left a podcast recording and been like, "Oh, I could have said this. I should have said that."
Yeah,
there's all of that, everything.
But yeah, the fact that the I was like in the back of my head, I was like, why didn't they ask Greg to testify? I love that they had like, you know, 30 seconds of Greg testifying at the beginning just to sort of tie
also,
that up.
They left him totally alone. Like the last episode, there's a war room. Everyone in the company is there.
I'm sure Carolina was in the back somewhere.
But he doesn't have his counsel. There's no counsel
there's
next to him.
There's
no one to like, you know, cover the microphone and.
Oh, and that
away.
Wonderful
if I'm Greg,
bit
I'm
where
like, I'm done with this. I'm going to Kendall and we're going to do some work.
That bit where Hugo tries to knife Carolina.
Oh, that's great.
You're like, wow. And Logan's like, "You are a mean motherfucker."
He just kind
He's
of shrugs.
He's like, "You asked, Logan."
Yeah. Right.
Should we talk about Logan's list for one second? That it's actually hilarious that it's written down.
Yeah.
On lined paper.
Yeah.
With stars.
With stars. And it's like your middle school notebook.
Totally.
You're like, oh.
Like you're doodling.
It's like the people you are.
You've written
right?
It's a slam book. Everyone you know. It's a slam book. And then put little stars next to the ones you like the least and are most likely to throw overboard. And then put a little box around
it. Box around it, yeah.
Like he's just sitting there doodling, right?
He's doodling with people's lives.
Yeah.
It had to be him. And he knew it too. He knew it. Before Philippe called on his phone, directly calling him, the investor.
Did he know what Philippe was going to say?
No, but I think he knew. He knew everyone was out for blood, and he knew. He's a smart guy.
That was the thing, like, when he's having the conversation with Logan, where he's like, "Logan, you need to go out and take the fall," and he's explaining why, and he goes, "They won't accept me." And you're like, of course they'd fucking accept you.
Of course, they want you.
And not only does he know it's a lie, but he knows that Kendall knows that it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think that's the point at which he's basically telling Kendall, like, you know, this is, here's a knife. Go knife me if you have the balls.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
And we should also, we haven't mentioned Connor very much, but we should also mention Connor's whole role in this episode, right? As approaching.
Hey, just, you know, just a little
just 100
million.
Just a little 100
mil. A little 100 mil, you know? I'm like,
why does Willa get to stay on the boat?
Because Will is with Connor.
Yeah, but Naomi was with Kendall.
And where's Tabitha?
I just don't. I understand that Will is probably there so we can get the. Oh, can
the iPad scene?
Do you want to take Felix's iPad? Check it. Because you can do the voice.
Ocean, yeah.
You did the voice before. What is she? She makes a noise.
What did the time say?
Oh, baby, you know what? I think let's just have a good time. And then, you know, when we're ready
Come
for
on,
a laugh.
Let me take a look.
You know, why don't we just
give me. Think. Just stop. Where?
It's.
Where is it?
Here. Just ignore the headline, okay? Disregard that because.
Blah!
That makes sense. That was awesome. Because, like, yeah, I love
She's
that.
She's there for that. Offers himself up as a sacrifice rather hilariously, and everyone just laughs him off. I mean, he is no sacrifice, right?
He's like, throw me into the volcano just as long as I have $100 million to cushion my fall.
And no, finally, Logan tells him his presidential campaign is an embarrassment. And so that's that. Like, if he wants his 100 mil, his little 100 mil, he has to give up the campaign, get rid of his con heads. And we should also talk about the viral meme. Go ahead, Ed.
The viral meme.
Do you mean the GIF?
The GIF.
I'm a GIF. And
yeah.
it's like Connor fist pumping and then the Berlin Wall falling. What was that?
I'm a GIF.
He's like, this is all good. This is all good.
Yeah.
No, I think it's hilarious that, you know, he's presented as, first of all, 100 million to stop your campaign. It's like, well, who has these kinds of conversations anyway?
The Roys do.
The Roys clearly do.
Yeah, talk.
And then he presents himself later as a potential sacrifice. Yeah, sure. I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I'll be the guy. Just pay me off is literally what he's saying mm-hmm. in that scene. He just feels like I liked his presence in this episode, but I didn't get the plot point for him.
Maybe he's inherited that whole, like, I will do anything for money thing from Willa.
Well, okay, but hold on. Look at what Logan does for all of the kids, how he manipulates all of the kids in this episode. Because if we're saying he's the puppeteer, really, for all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the fact that he's the one who sent Roman out. I mean, I'm not saying he made the coup happen in Turkey, but that whole hostage situation. But he did force his son into a very dangerous situation from which Roman returns a prodigal son, changed, serious. Also in this episode, Shiv, who is become kind of morally depraved over the course of the season, becomes a, like, actually puts herself on the line for her husband, becomes a dutiful daughter. Ken finally kills his dad. And Connor gives up the con heads. I mean, every single thing that Logan could want for these kids, like real actual bringing up your kids, happens.
Teaching them this lesson, right.
They all learn these, like, terrible lessons by fire. And if you look at who they are at the end, they're improved. They've been refined by the fire.
You remember when Rhea takes that first meeting at Chase Manhattan Plaza where they first talk about wanting to buy Pierce, mm-hmm. the first thing she says to Kendall is, oh, look, it's Oedipus Roy.
That was great.
Like, there's foreshadowing for you.
Yeah, Logan had it wrong because in the last episode he says to Roman, I know you want to fuck your mother or whatever, but
it wasn't that. It was just killing your father.
It was just Kendall was the Oedipus. Yeah. Just killing the father.
I think also what's notable is, you know, this season for the first time we saw the mom and just how...
Well, we saw her at the end.
But like how cold... Oh, that's right. But she's ultimately this cold presence, and as terrible as Logan is, the kids love him more. Back to this earlier point about how they're still hanging around him and they can't let go of him. And there's that scene with Kendall saying to Naomi, it's like he loves me, you know, I know, just it doesn't express in the way that normal people do. And so I think there's this weird filial piety and this sort of weird filial love that is, again, very Greek Aegean tragedy.
And people on Twitter were saying that the kiss that Kendall gives Logan as he's like mm-hmm. at the end of their conversation is a Judas-like.
It's a Judas mm-hmm. kiss.
Yeah. Can someone explain a little bit about that to me? Or
this is a Christian thing,
uh-huh.
Which I hesitate to call myself a Christian, which I'm not. But there is this thing in the Garden of Gethsemane,
right,
where Judas identifies Jesus as the person who has to be crucified by saying, like, I'm going to go up to all of these guys and the guy I kiss is going to be the guy that you need to crucify. And that's how the Romans know who to arrest.
Did you just get chills?
Whoa. Now goosebumps. I understand there's also a shot of Kendall in the yacht pool with his arms.
Yeah.
He's
like a Christ figure. He's going to be the one that's crucified. But then, no, Judas kiss. Boom.
Well, there's also, I mean, in cinema history, there's a famous scene in Godfather where Michael
Fredo kissed.
Kisses Fredo. Yeah. Right. He's like, I knew it was you.
Yeah.
So that's it's very much a part of cinematic history, right?
Yeah, and, beautiful.
You know, I thought it was very cleverly and well done here, and it wasn't too heavy handed, but just enough. But then when it happens at the end, you remember the kiss and you're like, oh, Judas kiss.
Right. Yeah. And also we should talk about, I was just thinking about Greg in this episode, he's less dazzled by the wealth than usual, right? When he comes up to the yacht,
he's like, yeah,
whatever.
Right. Well, and the rosé.
He's not
impressed.
I love that.
It's not really my
kind. You can't help but develop an opinion. You have a bunch of different types of champagne. You're going to prefer one to another.
What are you drinking? I'm not sure. It's a rosé. It's not my favorite.
Who you got a favorite champagne now?
Well, you can't help noticing. It's fine. I'll drink it. It's just not my favorite.
But it's so different from the Greg of the beginning of the season who's like dazzled by Kendall's penthouse, remember? And Kendall's just like, oh, it's all they had left in fashion. Yeah. Like all the good penthouses are taken. And Greg was like, what? Like
the
thing I love the most about it is Naomi. She's just like matter of fact telling Greg, like, oh yeah, she understands the world of wealth, even though she's not.
Well,
Roy.
She's old school money.
She is
right?
old
it's
money.
It's very
herself.
Classic, old school, new school. You know, sort of nouveau.
But
riche
she can
old
also
school.
Tweak them. That wonderful line, which I kind of missed, but I just got where she's like, where she calls up to Kendall, and she's like, "Your shorts match your rosé." Was that planned?
That's a very old money kind of way of thinking. You know, everything looks too much a thing.
Oh, and speaking of looks too much, the Marsha refit on the yacht.
That weird, like the glass
Christmas tree. It looks like something out of the Melania design scape.
It looked like she managed to, she decided she was going to get like Dale Chihulian to redesign the yacht.
It was bad.
It was unusually gauche.
Her legacy was.
But that's not her, right?
She refitted, yeah.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, if she had her druthers, she wouldn't get Dale Chihulian to redesign New York. That's not her actual taste. It's like her trying to piss off Logan.
Oh, right. It was like a passive-aggressive refitting of the yacht, which is, like, deeply sinister.
I also love that they're on the yacht the entire episode and the yacht doesn't go anywhere. There's a taxi boat. It's like everything is...
I need to ask about whether the yacht goes somewhere because... I think, I might be wrong about this, I think it leaves from Venice.
Right.
And then they meet Stewie on Paxos.
Paxos, which is on the western coast of Greece, off the western coast of Greece near Corfu.
Right.
So if it's not that far. You can't take a taxi boat necessarily. I think the yacht would have to get a little bit closer.
The yacht, I feel like the yacht did actually sail a bit from Venice
Maybe
towards
a little
Paxos.
Bit, yeah. Probably yeah. somewhere in between.
How does Kendall know where Stewie is? I was wondering.
No,
about
that's
that.
A good question, right?
Is he like back channeling with him? Like after the press conference ends and after he's torn up his prepared notes and mic dropped them, so much preferable to his mic drop several
do you think,
earlier. Okay, so does he go meet with Stewie or something?
So wait, like, so are you suggesting that was all sort of, again, play acting? That was theater? That he and Stewie had sort of set that up to sort of. To force Logan's
well,
hand.
Well, I think that was just your standard like mini crest screenwriting. Like you have to raise the possibility of like the Azerbaijanis coming in just to crush it. You need to raise the possibility of doing a deal with Stewie just to crush it. You then need to like even that whole comic scene, it's quasi comic breakfast with all of the what does Roman call them, the shit fuckers, all of the shit fuckers pointing fingers at each other. Like you need to raise the possibility that maybe it could be like Jerry and Frank and, you know, and maybe just to crush that as well, you know? And so that was just part of closing off all of the other avenues until it became clear that it needed to be a family member.
And it's plausible that you would know. I mean, if you think about you in your life, you kind of know where all of the major figures in your life are, even if they're not.
Like he's following him on Instagram or
something. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yes. Posting pictures.
Yeah, something like that. Like you kind of know where people.
Yeah, I think it's probably Instagram.
It's probably Instagram.
Or Telegram.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He's in the Telegram group, you know.
I mean, has everything in this season, if you start thinking about it, none of it meant anything. Like the Pierce deal fell through, didn't mean anything. The Turkish money didn't mean anything. Nothing happened. Like nothing actually
In terms
happened.
Of all the corporate actions, yes. There wasn't actual things happening there,
yeah,
but it was all about.
Yeah, I mean, like on episode one, they're worried about the proxy vote. And in episode 10, they're worried about the proxy
right.
vote.
So
like,
this is probably the most dramatic proxy vote series I have ever seen in my life, right? The thing is, these things do happen every day and they can get dramatic, but it's largely very abstract. And you're talking about shareholder groups that own millions of shares this way and that way. You have no idea how they're going to vote necessarily. And you don't need all of them either. You only need like one or two big fish sometimes to sort of land your side of the deal.
I would not have been able to anticipate at the beginning of episode
that
one
that this would be a whole proxy.
That we would get to the episode end of episode 10 and we still wouldn't have had the fucking proxy vote.
Yeah.
I guess the most consequential thing was like the 60 Minutes and the New York Magazine episode and like the airing of the skeletons, right? I mean, that is something that actually did in fact happen. And the proxy fight didn't matter until all this bad stuff came out into the open. And then it was like all the sharks in the water.
Is Kendall going to have to confess as part of this
about his
well because doesn't his dad hold that over him now though?
Yeah,
isn't
he
like
has been.
His he could still
so,
use that
okay
somehow.
here's my theory. I think Kendall is smart. If I'm remembering series one correctly, whenever Tom tries to talk to Kendall about the cruise bullshit, Kendall's like, are you a fucking moron? Don't tell me this shit. And he's like, I do not want to hear this. I do not want to know anything about this. You go away and do your motherfucking job. Kendall, I think, colorably, did a pretty good job of not knowing what was going on at cruises. Logan knew what was going on at cruises. But Kendall, I think, honestly,
you think
did a good job of actually keeping himself out of the loop.
Right. But I mean, the fact that his dad is lording over him that he killed somebody.
Yeah, the car accident. Yeah, this is what
yeah but
set
not
off
a real person.
No real
person
involved.
Yeah.
I think that's part of that scene was when Kendall said, oh, I deserve this. And Logan reassured him no real person involved. I feel like that was a big deal because not only did it show how depraved Logan is in thinking there are real people and not real people, but also it kind of showed that Logan doesn't care about that at all. Like maybe if he did move forward to betray him, it doesn't matter that he has this over him because he doesn't even think
it was like freeing. Yeah, because he realized that that Logan's been holding it over him.
But, he
but in fact, Logan doesn't even
thinking,
care about it.
Yeah, he does not even thinking about it.
Or
which kind of lets him off the hook.
Right.
Even if he does use it, though, somehow, it's sort of like, as far as Kendall's concerned, it's like, you were going to take me down anyway. So, like, here we go. Let's just do this, right?
Yeah.
So, if you're going to take me down, I'm going to take you down. Maybe I win out of this, right? So, that whole, in the first episode of the second season, where there's that sort of, at the end of that first episode, where Kendall goes to Sandy and Stewie and says, hey, this is what my message from my dad. It's really a message between him and his dad now, right? Which is like, you might kill me, but I might kill you too. So let's just take
And
this.
Then also that was like at the end of episode one, when Kendall goes into that meeting with Sandy and Stewie and he's like, I'm going to cut your dick off and I'm going to kill your wives and children. Right. And like, it sounds like it's a threat. And then he tries it again in episode 10. And Stewie's just like, oh, stop it with your fucking
He's like, it doesn't matter how many severed dicks you shove up my, you know, ball box or whatever.
Until poop's like, coming out of my mouth.
Right. Yeah, that was great. And he's sniffing the lavender the whole time.
I have a question about Logan and or Brian Cox. I'm not sure which one. There's this scene on the side of the yacht where he's talking to Kendall. And he gives this kind of quasi-Shakespearean monologue. And he's like, me, I never did anything really. I'm a good Catholic lad. And all the rest of them behave like
he
a pack of stray dogs.
On.
And he's like, no, I'm not going to step down. And like, that was him talking up to his, you know, son, like basically, number one, telling Kendall that the shareholders want him gone. That was like where he was teeing
that
up
was the first,
whole thing.
Right.
But number two, like, you know, it was his little soliloquy, right? That was him basically opening up some genuine belief that he is in some weird way innocent, that he's not this malign, evil character. And it was this weird, like, and Brian Cox, when he delivers those lines, does it in this incredibly sort of Shakespearean way. Like, in a way, it stops being Logan and starts being sort of, I don't know, Richard III or something.
But I think he's been playing Richard III most of this time.
Maybe.
Right. Or King Lear, you know, if it's all. I think there is something about this idea that he thinks he's a good Catholic when he's actually not a good Catholic, right? Is a very Catholic thing. Right?
Which is true of all Catholics, like, bad thinking, Catholics.
Yeah, exactly. All bad Catholics are sort of, you know, I was raised Catholic, so I think I know a little bit about this.
Oh, but you can explain the Judas schism better than I can.
No, you explained it very well, actually. But it's this whole idea that because Catholics sort of abide by these, like, kind of Kantian imperatives, right? Like, there's a left and a right, and a good and a bad, and a right and a wrong. And, you know, there's, even if you've done the wrong, he can't call it the wrong, right? He's got to say that it's the right. And so, you know, I think he, and that's also what makes him him, like why he succeeds in his career. And I think that's the moment that Kendall's sort of realizing, okay, there's something broken here, you know, that there's like this guy is like, there's something up.
Yeah, but all bad people think they're good people. They all persuade themselves that they're good people.
You're the hero of your own story.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
So everyone thinks, I mean, except for Kendall. Kendall doesn't actually
believe
because that
Kendall,
he's a good person.
The whole season has been living through fuzziness, right? And I think most of the characters live through that kind of fuzziness, whereas Logan is the only character who, like, has clarity about who he is and what he wants, right? Mm-hmm. And then finally Kendall finds that, like, quote-unquote clarity at the end, right? This mm-hmm. is what I need to do, who I need to be.
Okay, so can I just ask, because, like, one of the main things that people say, like, the people who don't like Succession.
Who are they?
Unanimously say.
Pete Buttigieg?
That the reason that they don't like Succession is because all of the characters are so hateful and they're all such bad people. So I think that's true that all the characters are bad people. But if you go down the list, like, how many of them, like Logan, think they're actually good people?
That's part of the brilliance of Succession as a concept and the nothing happening of this season. Because it's a little bit, what keeps on happening again and again is it's a little bit like you really don't want, anybody who really wants to build a nuclear bomb is not the guy that you want or the woman that you want building a nuclear bomb, right? Like, that's how they, or like anybody who really wants to be a cop, you kind of want to not let into the academy. But if somebody doesn't want to be a cop, they'd be a good cop. And it's kind of like anybody who'd want to run this empire needs to be discounted completely. Like, it means they're a terrible person. So they have to, like, go through fire to emerge in order to be able to do it. Like, anybody, they're all so bad. And that's why they keep on not being able to succeed.
But I think because they recognize they're all so bad, too.
Yeah. Roman knows that he's bad. Yeah. Kendall knows that he's bad. Shiv definitely knows that she's bad. Yeah. Like, when she's just sitting there on the beach and Tom is like, look what you've done to me. And all she can do is just kind of say, I'm sorry. Because, like, she knows that she has no excuse.
She has no
for what
justification for that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're all bad. And that's why I think that their belief in themselves is keeping them from being able to succeed, Logan. And that Kendall, in his self-flagellation and self-reflection, is closest to going, I'm a flawed human. And without making any excuses, which is why he's able to eventually step up.
But that's because he had that at the end of the first season where he had that reckoning.
Yeah.
And that this whole second season is about him sort of rebuilding himself and basically saying, yeah, I'm bad. So what?
Yeah.
That's what it is now, right? And I think that's – so to the earlier point about, like, the people who don't like Succession, which of course there are plenty, or who can't get into it for whatever reason – it's not television the way that we like to think of television, right? Which is sort of like fun and light and easy and everything's just sort of funny. I mean, these are Shakespearean, you know, characters. These are, you know, these are the gods on Olympus, so they're all terrible. And I think for at least me, it appeals because, like, this is who we are as people, right? These are the worst of us is us in a lot of ways, especially now. I don't know. I don't know if you guys, I'm not speaking for you guys, but what's the appeal for you guys?
I mean, it's both funny and dark. And it says something about these big media companies that are running us. And so there's that insider appeal as someone who works in the media to see that.
But if you cut that out for a second, like, is it for regular everyday people, for civilians, is this relatable?
For people who aren't, like, I'm always slightly surprised when someone who's not on media Twitter likes Succession.
I mean, I think it's not that different from like The Sopranos or like prestige drama where it's all unlikable, allegedly unlikable people.
Terrible people, right.
But who are actually kind of likable,
yes.
Like a Tony Soprano or the Breaking Bad guy, you know, I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter.
Bryan Cranston.
But it's sort of in that, it's in that tradition and in that vein where it's like people doing nasty shit to each other, but they look really good. And there is something you do wind up rooting for them. You do wind up rooting for Kendall over and over this season.
I mean, you wind up rooting for Shiv's wardrobe.
Yeah.
I mean, so, but there is a sort of in the tradition of theater, especially Western theater, whether it's Shakespeare or the Greek tragedies, the idea is that we look at these characters as the setting because they represent sort of the ultimate in humanity, right? Meaning like this is it. If you're going to live a full human life, you will live it as a king or a queen, right? And their flaws would ultimately show our flaws as humans, right? Whereas if you're down on your luck, sort of poor person, it's like that's the bad situation and it's terrible, but that doesn't tell you about humanity, right? So when everything is stripped away and you're just yourself as human beings and you're a terrible person, that says something about humanity. So it's meant to be relatable in that way. We look at, you know, King Lear, Richard III, or Oedipus for that matter, because they're kings and princes, but in this universe of Succession, they're propped up as sort of kings and princes and queens and princesses. So is it relatable that way?
Yeah,
or does it not succeed? I don't know.
It's That's like you strip away when you're that wealthy and powerful, you strip away all your other, the hierarchy of needs is all met.
Right.
So you are just coming to it with your appetites.
As a person,
Just as a person, you don't have to worry about anything else. And then who are you as just a person? Oh, and it turns out you're just absolute trash.
And that's the thing. Do people recognize that if they were in this circumstance, meaning unlimited wealth effectively and all this kind of power, that they would be as terrible as these people?
Yeah, that's why it's a successful show.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm with you.
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company, and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
So, okay, let's have favorite lines.
Oh, okay. There was the one where Roman is responding to his father who asks him, you know, is he okay after being held hostage? And he says, I've had worse experiences at hotels. I once stayed at a Marriott.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Tamara?
Thank you for the chicken.
What does that mean?
Thank you for
Can
the
we
chicken.
Unpack that scene well, that, a little
okay,
bit?
Okay,
why does he eat his chicken? Yeah.
Yeah. What is Tom doing in that scene?
I think that's his fuck this moment. Because Shiv says, I'm going to go talk to him for you. And I think that's his kind of, I'm going to grow a, well, I don't like want to say grow a pair, but like that's, I think he's going, I am a person to be fucked with here. Like I'm a real person. And so he goes and he sits down and he eats his chicken.
He does this whole theater with his sunglasses and then
he licks his finger.
Oh my God, the finger lick. The finger lick is so good.
It's his way of saying fuck you. His way of standing up to Logan.
And it is visually, it's resonant with the Ortolan. Right?
Yes.
He did another small piece of poultry.
Yeah.
So him and small poultry is like a
That's brilliant. And that is
then
brilliant.
We also have it's also a chicken and egg thing, right? Because we have the tomlet.
Oh my god,
egg.
Amazing.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Eggy peggy. Do you see what I'm saying? The Scotch egg.
Uh-huh. Where was the Scotch egg?
The Scotch egg is what they had when he thought it was Narancino.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I think it's on one level, it's just continuing with this chicken egg cycle.
Oh my god, who wants to be the, you know, the chief of chicken continuity in the screenwriter's room at Succession?
No, yeah. I bet you they really think about it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm very clued into that person. When a chicken or an egg shows up, I'm like, I hear you, I see you, and you see me.
Brilliant.
Anyway.
I think we talked about this earlier. It's going to be sort of like a more quiet line, right? Where Roman, you know, where he's talking to his brother and sister, he's like, can we like afterwards have like a conversation like normal? Something about that line. Yeah,
it was quite tragic. My favorite deep cut, I think, honestly, maybe partly because it's one of my favorite movies in the history of movies, but when Shiv says Rhea's out, melted.
What was that?
Squizz of Oz. The Wicked Witch is melted.
Oh, nice. I didn't catch that.
It's elemental. Yeah. I mean, there's this, I think this season especially is full of references in that way. Absolutely.
Melted.
And of course, we have to mention the last line.
This is Kendall at the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, this is the day his reign ends.
I have with me today copies of records that show his personal sign-off. How much those of us who executed his wishes bear responsibility is for another day. But I think this is the day his reign ends.
Does it, you guys?
This is where we need to end this episode and possibly even this season of Slate Monday Succession. Is a little bit of completely baseless speculation about season 3. Ed, you think that like third time is the charm?
Third time is the charm.
And Logan is going to wind up out.
I think he's going to wind up out for a bit, but I do think this is going to be like a real palace.
Is he
going
to fight to come back? Is he going to fight his son to come back?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He's absolutely going to fight his son to come back, and I think that car accident is going to be a factor. Absolutely. It's going to be something. It's going to take some form in this next season.
Because that was the threat at the end of season 1, right? He's like, you can't bring me down, because if you do, then I will unveil. Right.
But it hovers through the entire second season like this sort of phantasm, mm-hmm. you know, and it's going to sort of substantiate in the next season.
And then Kendall's like, okay, you want to bring me down?
Let's do this.
Yeah.
This makes it so much more fun.
But Logan covered it up. So I feel like his hands are dirty too in this thing. Like he exposes Kendall. He exposes himself.
Yeah, but his body man, you know, I think he's got like an envelope full of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Tamara, what's your prognostication for season 3?
I agree. I agree with Ed that the third time's a charm. And the thing I don't know, and I was just trying to think about, was how to keep the ongoing, you know, tension just between the two of them compelling enough. I'm trying to figure out what the twist is other than them going back and forth over like who's done more horrible shit, like the, you know, car crash, cover up of car crash, cover up of decades of, you know, rape and horrible behavior. But we've already seen Logan and Kendall tangle a lot. So keeping that fun to watch is going to require some, you know, pyrotechnics.
Right. Logan still needs to be able to control Kendall and his like crazy mind tricks. That's what the whole show is about. But like, let me ask, you know, the proxy vote, does it actually happen? Does it ever happen, or do they manage to like do some kind of deal with Sandy and Stewie?
They're going to extend that last day for like however long
and,
it lasts.
And more to the point, if third time is the charm, then who is the new CEO?
I think that's the next season is going to continue, and we still won't know who the next CEO is. It's going to be like Kendall versus Roman, because I feel like Roman is sort of coming up as something because he's got his new gravitas.
It's going to be the Roman Jerry axis versus the Shiv Tom axis.
Well, are Shiv and Tom going to make it? Unclear to me if their marriage makes it or not. So that'll be for season 3 as well. Something that I'm looking forward to.
The Shiv and Tom breakup.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen with that?
I was very glad. I was super worried there for a minute. when they walk onto the boat and they're about to have a threesome and they find the girl that they're going to have the threesome with. I'm like, wait, this is Succession. You can't have sex on Succession.
Don't worry. There was no sex.
I was like, you didn't think it was going to happen, did you? I was like, how would they? I mean, And then that amazing scene where Tom just like sort of.
I'm not a hippie. Also, Shiv with her phone, how she, the way she calls everything off or gets anything happening is like she just brings that phone with her. Like she goes out into the hallway to call off the threesome. Tom's like, I can't do this. And she's like, that's fine. I had to go get something anyway. What does she do? Like text the helicopter? It's off.
She makes that night. Yeah. What is it? The cutting of the throat thing that she makes. She's talking to find out if the going private deal happened. And Tom is at the top of the water slide, which is another hilarious thing. They're all going down that water slide. And she's just like doing that knife to the throat thing. And then he does it back to her. It's like the most unsubtle situation I've ever seen.
This is how rich people communicate on large boats, because the boat is just too big. You can't just go up to someone. You have to like signal across the expanse of boat.
I was wondering, I had thought, because I did some, I read a Twitter thread about yachts. And I was wondering, because Rupert Murdoch famously had, like, he fell on a yacht.
He like broke his back.
And it was, like, really serious. And it, like, paralleled kind of the beginning of season one, where all the siblings are flown into the hospital because he was, like, helicoptered off the yacht. And then they all went and gathered. They thought it was his deathbed, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, is this where this is going? Is Logan going to die on this yacht? Which leads me to maybe what happens in season three. Like, at some point, Logan has to die, right?
No, Logan's immortal. Logan is immortal.
Okay.
It comes, what are we, in like 10 months?
I guess. We'll be back in 10 months.
We'll be back in 10 months with season three of Succession. They, you know, I'm sure they're writing it furiously as we speak. But until then, that's it. That's it for Succession season two. It was an awesome season. And thank you, Jesse Armstrong, and all of the crew and cast and writers and directors and everyone else. And Pusha T, who did the remix of the theme song, and everyone. Yeah, thank you to Ed Lee for coming in. Thank you to Mara Adler for coming in. And that's it for Slate Money Succession.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.